Oh yes, guilty movie pleasure fans. Today we're back with a spooky Christmas classic. If this movie doesn't make your skin crawl, it's on too tight, because today we're covering Black Christmas.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's guilty movie pleasure.
I kind of like this new voice.
Yeah,
this is what happens when I have congestion for over a week, and then just now.
For all the listeners and viewers out there, are we done?
We're done. We're done. That's nice. It. All right, see you next week.
That's cool. Let's get all the music out of the way in the beginning.
Yeah, let's do that.
For all the listeners and viewers out there, Ben, up until the very moment that we started, was describing the bronchitis medically to me.
Yeah. You know, that's what I do. I like to drop some nurse knowledge.
He was just teaching me about infection.
Yeah. Well, it's because my wife was nervous and my mom, who was a nurse growing up, was like, no, don't worry. Bronchitis is the after effects.
She was a nurse growing up, like, until she went to college. Like,
my mom was a nurse when I was growing up.
Got
is what
it.
I mean.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyways. Hey, we're back. It's been a minute. God, I don't remember the last show I did. It's been a few weeks for me.
It was 2017.
It was 2017. Definitely. If you haven't tuned in before, I'm Ben Begley and I'm the host of this show. And if you have tuned in before, welcome back, because with me as always is my partner in crime,
Jesse McIntyre.
Yes, the duo is back. We've been in different iterations. You and Ryan did The Shallows, which was a while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, like a couple weeks ago. Yeah, it was the week before Thanksgiving.
I feel like I don't know what time is anymore. So today I was texting back and forth with Jesse. I don't really know if he had a say in this at all, or if I just was like, this is what we're doing.
This is my favorite kind of interaction with respect to the show is when Ben says, what do you think about these three possible things? And I say, oh, that one seems cool. And he's like, but what about this one? And then we end up doing that one.
Yeah, I need to be. Yeah, well, no. Right now, I'm making a promise on air that Jesse can pick next week.
Oh,
Jesse's
how
picking
about that?
Next week. So blame him, good or bad, and you can blame me, good or bad, this week, because I wanted to do Black Christmas because the new one's coming out from Blumhouse, which it got a lot of flack at first when they announced it as a PG-13 rating, but after seeing the original. Aside from language, there's not a ton of violence in it. So, like, I feel like a PG-13 could work for the new one. I'm going to go see it this weekend with an open mind. And the director's been tweeting a bunch of stuff, and she seems super cool. So I just want to support her because she just seems like a really cool person. And I like when cool people make movies that look fun.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I think it's a good thing.
As opposed to, like, dickheads that make movies, you know?
Sure.
I had never seen Black Christmas. It's by Bob Clark, who directed A Christmas Story. And I had always, like, it's not technically the first slasher film, but it's been labeled as the one that really defined some of the slasher tropes that then other movies later, like When a Stranger Calls, Scream, even Halloween borrowed some stuff from this, that there's a lot of stuff in this movie, The Final Girl, trying to guess who the killer is, all that stuff. There's a lot of tropes in this movie. The slutty girl who drinks and is boozy the whole time. Oh my God, Margot Kidder is incredible in this movie. She's just, how has she not been arrested for everything she does in this film children?
It was a simpler time.
It was, 1974.
Yeah.
They didn't care. But it had been built up so much in my mind. And I just realized the town is Bedford, like Bedford Falls in It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I watch older slasher films now, my brain can't adjust to the aesthetic. Like, I saw the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre way after I should have. And I thought it was good, but I thought it was so raw that, like, the filmmaking bothered me because it was just, like, so raw.
Yeah.
It was barely... But I get why at the time it broke all these rules. And for me, the shots in this were so cool, and there were some really fun 70s aesthetics. We'll get to Margot Kidder, but her death scene is my favorite, the way they shot it. It's just, like, weird and kind of dreamlike, and there's some strange stuff in here. There's some quirky, weird characters that I found hilarious. And normally in a slasher film, when only two people get killed in the first hour, and then there's only... This has a relatively low body count.
Yeah.
But I was entertained the entire time, and I was cracking up. There's some genuinely creepy stuff in there, which rarely happens for me when I watch... things that could be considered more dated. I thought all the phone calls were terrifying and super weird. The shot with his eyeball looking through the crack is awesome. There's just some really great cinematography in this. And it reminded me of the first time I saw John Carpenter's Halloween, like how even though that movie is could be considered dated by just its time period and everything, it's still effective for me. The first Halloween is one of my favorite slashers. And now this one has become one of my new favorite one of my new favorite horror films, and especially one of my new favorite Christmas movies. I think I'm going to watch this every year. Now I'm excited to see what you think after I just gushed over it for about 7.5 minutes.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Let's see the plot in under 3 minutes. No.
That'd be incredible.
I really enjoyed it. I, like you, have a hard time sort of like readjusting to older films without the context of like having seen everything that was influenced by those films. Like, it's really hard to appreciate them with a clean slate.
Is it also sometimes difficult because you've seen so many things that they did in this movie repeated over and over again?
Yeah, that's what I mean. And like, I've seen the movies that have borrowed and paid homage and all of this, and so like, it's not a groundbreaking experience to watch this movie. It's not there's nothing new really.
Even though it
was the new thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the way they told the story was really well done.
Yeah, right.
It sort of like was ahead of me the whole time.
Yeah, I was sitting there like who what's going on? Like who's the killer? What's happening? You know?
I mean, I checked out for a couple minutes because I was like, I know that it's this one guy who they like are sort of pointing.
Oh, I was gonna be so pissed
the whole
was.
Time. And then I think they did a really interesting thing at the end. But like even the journey all the way through, they kept it interesting, and they kept like, for me, one of the things in horror movies that sort of drives me crazy is like, why don't you just leave? Like, why don't you get out of there? Mm-hmm. But I never felt that way in this movie.
'Cause they never know. That's the crazy thing is they believably kill off people with no one knowing for so long. Because it makes sense. It's like, you're like, oh yeah. And at first I was like, why didn't they just check the whole house? And then I'm like, oh, it is just this weird attic that only the sorority mom knows about.
Right. And the whole time, like, this is something that, this is one of the things that was borrowed from Scream borrowed this, was the phone calls coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
But the expectation set the whole time is the danger is outside.
Yeah.
You have to stay in. And the flip of that was really well executed and really well done.
Which I think for me, since at the time people probably didn't realize it was coming from inside the house,
right.
Maybe. I don't know. I can't put myself in their brains. But since I knew it was coming from inside the house, it made the tension that much more palpable for me. Or palpable? Palpable? Yeah. I'm palpable. Mm-hmm. I'm just adding syllables. Palpable. So anyways, it made the tension more...
Pamplemousse.
It made the tension more ever-present for me because... Pamplemousse. Yes. Because I knew he was there, and I was like, fuck, just leave.
Right.
Sorry, it's going to be swearing. Whatever, fuck it. There's swearing in a lot of the clips, but it's like, there's parts where I'm like, just leave. Get out of there, because he's there. And I watched this yesterday during the day with the curtains drawn and headphones on, and it still creeped me out, because the phone calls are really eerie, and I read afterwards on some of the trivia on IMDb that it's like, it's a mix of the actor who played the killer, the director, and a female actress at the time, and some of it's gibberish, some of it's like, and so it's really unnerving because I'm trying to figure out what they're saying, and it's even weirder that you only get glimpses of it.
Yeah,
and what you do is really gross and like weird.
It's extremely like, so there are a couple things in it where I was like, I don't know. One of the things was that when they start screaming in the phone, if they're inside the house, they would also hear them screaming in the house, I would assume, because hear someone at some point screaming. When she wakes up from the bad dream, we hear her screaming.
That's a good point.
And I actually preferred the version of the portions of the phone calls when when you couldn't understand what was going on. It was just, that was way creepier to me than when they started raising their voice and started like freaking out on the other end.
And this was, I may be mistaken. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I read that this was, one of the first times that they had made the POV shot by strapping the camera to his chest and doing this mini rig so he could climb up. All those shots are really tense and creepy. When he's going through that attic, first of all, it's like, why is there all this shit in the attic? This attic is horrifying. Yeah. Like, there's a creepy ass, like, old horse for, like, a toddler in there. It's just like...
for all the toddlers in the sorority house.
Yeah. But I was just really impressed by how a film from 1974 that's very methodically paced still kept my attention. And I can't remember if I said this already. My brain, I have so many... I had a cold, and I have so many antibiotics and medications in my system, I might repeat myself.
It's going to be a fun show.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be better than when I do the uptime. But yeah, I usually when a slasher film... I started to say this, and I may have got off topic. Usually when I see a slasher film, I want to fast forward through the first 40 minutes till the kills start, because it's just like... Like the Friday the 13th movies, they're a lot of fun, but a lot of times I just don't give a shit about anybody. Mm-hmm. And this one, I found myself like... I cared about Jess's story and her boyfriend, and I thought it was really edgy that they were bringing up abortion and confronting it so much. But then I started thinking about other movies like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which I know is the 80s in Greece. There were movies that were talking about abortion, and I feel like then it became like something where it was like, don't talk about that ever again. But I was just shocked to have it. Like, one of the craziest statements to me was when, like, after he realizes her boyfriend, Peter, after he realizes his recital went bad and he's like smashing at the piano, which was like a precursor to Whiplash when he's like going nuts and sweating and the three old white dudes are just staring at him as he's doing his recital, which I didn't know a recital was in front of three people.
I don't know a lot about. There's a lot I have to learn about conservatory recitals.
I guess so.
I don't know a thing about them.
But when his dreams are crushed, and so then he's like, look, I'll quit the conservatory and I'll move away with you. We can start a family. And she's like, just because you can't have your dreams doesn't mean mine are stopping.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
I was like, that's great.
I know.
Like, that's a super progressive thing for 1974. And I think that there were some really interesting themes. I think Margot Kidder, even though she's kind of a caricature of that person, you can also buy that there's somebody like that.
Mm.
And I just loved all the characters. I loved all the quirky, weird, like Nash, the dumb deputy or the dumb captain or whatever.
He was so good.
He was so funny.
Because he didn't, his performance was unbelievable because he didn't play it like an oaf.
No.
He was just like a regular, like overworked who just was so stupid.
Yeah.
It was really good.
And the acting still stands up. Like, I really like the acting. I can't get over how good this movie is. And the new one has a high bar to clear, but it looks like they're going in a different direction. It looks like they're going in a more kind of like fun, fast-paced 90s slasher version. Like, I Know What You Did Last Summer type thing. We'll see. But anyways, let's do the plot in under 3 minutes. Let's do that. You ready in the booth there, Ryan? I'm so glad we both liked it.
Yeah.
Yes.
We did it.
How rare.
It happens like once every other episode.
Once every other Christmas. We are all set, y'all.
Okay.
Count you in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
So we set up that there's this creepy-ass Silent Night playing in the beginning, and there's a stalker following Jess to the sorority home. He climbs up, goes in the attic, and then all the sorority sisters are getting ready to leave for the holiday, and Margot Kidder's character is pissed off at her mom because she's going to go hook up with her boyfriend or something like that and leave her. So then she's like, all right, we're all going to plan a skiing trip that never really materializes, mainly because people get murdered. And then, who's the first one that goes up?
I forget her name, but one of the...
Claire.
Yeah. So her boyfriend leaves, and then she goes up, and she gets strangled
The dry cleaning bag. Yeah. It's such an awesome sequence. And then they're all getting ready for this big, like, they're helping out with kids.
Like a charity thing. The next day, underprivileged kids.
Which we'll get to, because it's incredible. No one should ever take these kids to this sorority. They're like, they have their boyfriend in the beginning who's, like, bald with, like, everybody looks 40.
Yeah.
Then the sorority mom comes home, and she's hysterical. She's hid bottles of whiskey everywhere in the sorority house, and she's just drinking left and right. And then she hears something, and she goes up. She hears the cat. The cat gets so many people killed.
Yeah.
She goes up in the attic, and she gets a hook to the face from the killer.
Yep.
She's dead.
Meanwhile, the first girl's dad has showed up, and he's trying to find her, and she didn't show up to the meeting spot. So he goes to the sorority house, and the sorority mom's like, I haven't seen her. That's okay. They go to the police station. The policeman takes down the information, doesn't take him seriously.
Nash,
so
good old Nash.
Yep. And then
there's a young girl that goes missing.
Yes.
And they don't. So now there's Claire's missing. missing and a young 13-year-old. So there's this cool kind of detective, kind of weird, the, you don't know who's killing who, whatever. And they all go on a search party. They join the search party. So then my brain's trying to calculate who's missing, who's at the search party and who's still at the house, who could still be the killer. And they find the body of the 13-year-old girl, and it's a super dark scene. And then the sorority mom gets killed, and then
and then Jess comes back, and
Peter goes nuts on his piano,
right? And she tells him about the baby, and then he's like, "Well, we should keep it." And she's like, "No, I'm going to have an abortion. I didn't even want to tell you." And then he has a terrible recital. He goes nuts on the piano. He comes back and proposes to her.
Yeah,
And she's like, "No, not interested."
Yeah,
and then he leaves,
and he gets real weird.
And then the drunk girl is upstairs having a nightmare.
Yeah.
So she goes up and she calms her down. And then
because she thought someone was in the room.
Yes.
And then it turns out somebody was in the room.
Yeah.
By the way, we're going to spoil the ending pretty soon. So if you haven't seen this, stop listening for the next 30 seconds.
So she gets killed. And then
by a unicorn statue. Yeah. Awesome sequence.
And then her friend goes up and she gets there. They've traced the calls. So they're trying to track any call that comes in.
So good.
And then he runs and he's like, it's come from in the house.
10 seconds.
And then she goes up and tries it. And then she runs around.
Yeah.
And he goes down.
And
then
the boyfriend breaks in and they cut away and she kills him and she's knocked out. And they think it was the boyfriend, and then it ends up being somebody else. We'll get to. Like I said, okay, so there's a lot to unpack here. It's hard for me to remember exactly the placement
the order of things, yes.
But like we were saying, there's so many cool moments in this movie. Like, just the analog way of them tracking the phone call was such a suspenseful, cool sequence for me. Like, every time he's running, I don't even know what he's
doing.
That
was actually,
it was fascinating.
So interesting.
It was fascinating to me.
I was like, I would love to watch a 15-minute extra
what
the fuck is going on here? What is he tracking?
Yeah, because he's going and he's looking at, all the, he's at the telephone company, and he's looking at every active call, but I don't know how he's, tracing which calls which, and then he plugs into it, and then he hears the voice and realizes it's but I have no idea how he's doing it. But his every character, even if we don't learn a lot about them, they have a distinct point of view and a distinct way of speaking and carrying themselves. Like, each person, so often in horror films it just feels like cardboard cutouts of people.
Sure.
This feels like real people that are plucked and planted in this story. Even like the random farmer that comes in later to the police station that shot the cop in the ass. That's such a funny sequence because he's just like, "Well, the police officer was trespassing on my property. He got an ass full of buckshot," you know? And it's just like, every character feels like they live in this small town.
Yeah. He came in, if I'm not mistaken, he came in holding his gun to the police station
that he shot a cop with.
None of the other officers that responded to the scene were like, "Hey man,
yeah,
we're gonna bring you in. You're gonna have to leave your gun. You can't carry that."
Because it's not like he's harmless. He shot a cop in the ass.
He's already used it.
Yeah. Let's get into some sound clips here because I really want to get into this movie. And like I said, if you haven't seen it, stop watching, watch it, come back because I don't want to spoil the ending. But if you have seen it, keep going, or if you don't care, whatever. Let's do clip number one because this is the breathing. So like Jason had that and Michael Myers is just silent with the. It's the Claritin D. Halloween theme just went out of my ears, my brain. Let's play his breathing. This is the killer's breathing in the beginning. I have a friend who back in when we had sleepovers back in the day, he would breathe like that when he slept, and all of us were like, "Dude, you breathe creepy when you sleep," and he'd be like, "No, I don't." And so one time we recorded him, I swear it sounded just like this. Okay, stop! Ooh. It's too weird.
That's such a hard note to take. You breathe weird when you're asleep.
How do you
I don't know.
How do you fix that?
I don't know what to do.
Well, thank you for giving me a complex for the rest of my
existence.
I'm
never going to be able to fall asleep peacefully.
Either. I did have a clip, but I didn't do it because out of context of it, it wasn't that funny. But the first time I watched the movie, when Jess picks up the phone and she instantly starts yelling, I laughed out loud. She was like, "Pardon? Hulu! And she just yells so loud. I don't know why I found it so funny, but I didn't realize the context yet that they were getting prank calls and she thought that's what it was. Yeah. And it turned out to be Margot Kidder's mom, which this is one of the first introductions to Margot Kidder. So they're having this whole party and her character's name is, I'll find it here somewhere. I just have her as Margot Kidder the entire time. Anyways, Barb, that's her name. So they're introduced where they're all drinking and having fun with their boyfriends. Like I said, all of them look 30s.
They're old-ass boyfriends.
They're old-ass boyfriends.
This is like a weird cult sorority where they all are required to date the professor's brothers. Like, this is... Yeah. I actually looked up the age of the Peter.
Yeah.
The boyfriend.
Oh, he looks super old.
He was 38 when this movie came out.
And the... Chris looks old too, and he has that super sweet, like giant furry jacket, like Dolomite. I'm like, what is going on? But that's the thing. There's all these weird details that seem so quirky and fun, and I can tell that the director of A Christmas Story did this because there's some ridiculous little nudges. Mm-hmm. Now the casting of 38-year-olds to be dating college
kids,
was
tough.
That's tough.
Yeah.
But the coat, I can take that.
Like, no wonder he's ready to get married, man. He's like he's been in college for 20 years.
Exactly. I even wrote, are they all 49? I don't know why specifically I thought 49 was funny.
They're not quite 50.
So Margot's on the phone, Barb's on the phone with her mom, and you can this the best thing is this line is hysterical, but it happens in the background of Chris and Claire saying goodbye to each other. Clip number two.
You're a real gold-plated whore, mother.
See you next week.
It's almost like a tucked away afterthought, but it's one of the funniest. She's saying this to her mom.
Yeah.
And you're it a has real gold-plated whore. You
legitimately
know, that mother.
No impact.
See you next week.
The story, we never meet her mother. We don't follow that thread. It's just
I feel like we just know where Barb's coming from when she gets sloshed and she's saying super vulgar things in front of children. Yeah. This is skipping ahead. I just want to trace the debauchery of Barb.
Yeah,
where she's with Claire's dad at this fundraiser for kids of some sort, underprivileged kids. I don't know.
They say underprivileged kids.
Sure. But, yeah. And she's letting him drink champagne, and she like starts like making him chug the champagne, and I'm like, what? Where are the parents?
Right.
Where are the parents for these kids? And poor.
They're underprivileged.
Maybe it's an orphanage or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's. And then poor Claire's dad. He's just thrown into all this, and like, not only is my daughter missing, but I've realized. Maybe I shouldn't have sent her to the sorority house.
Sure.
Like, there is some shit going down in this place.
I mean, I would argue, like, what were your expectations, sir?
In the seven, yeah. You know, what were your expectations?
Right.
And a boozy house mom? Oh, it's so funny. So then there's, oh, God, yeah, this is really weird. So is clip number three? Yeah, this is the Moaner prank call. So we've met all the sorority girls. We've met Jess. We've met Phil. I think is Philomena, I guess. Her name.
Yeah.
Barb, Phil, Barb, Jess, Claire. And that's it pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Phil, Barb, Jess,
like
and
Phyllis.
Phyllis. Yeah.
But it's Phil.
Yeah. Phyllis makes sense. Phyllis, Barb, Jess, and Claire. And then the house mom are your main people you're following. And then the boyfriends are Chris and Peter and then Claire's dad. That's your main group. Just so we know the main players. Now let's play. This is when we get our first phone call, and I didn't pull the entire thing cause it's super long. And it gets very vulgar to the point where YouTube will pull our shit down.
Yes.
Let's play the Moaner prank call.
He's expanded his act. Could that be one person? No, Claire, that's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir doing their annual obscene phone call.
It's so weird. And then he does like this whole thing where he's like, because like the reason those phone calls are so unnerving is because at one moment you're like, oh, this is just some frat boy pranking. And then it gets like so weird that you're like, what the fuck? What? what's happening?
Yeah.
And then it gets super weird, and then it goes back to being kind of comedic again, and it goes on forever. We're like, they're just panning across all the sorority sisters as this dude just talks about super gross shit.
Well, immediately I was like, this guy's masturbating.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, you could, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to me, I'm like, if
he is a violent masturbator.
Yes. Right. Well, then he like transitions.
That's his O face.
He was watching Deep Dish Orgy. Does that timeline work? I don't know when that movie came out.
I'm sure there's some universe where it does.
All these women are just like gathered around the phone listening to this, and none of them are like, I would actually prefer not to listen. They're all like, I'm actually, I want to follow along here. I don't want to miss anything.
I just want to hear the story.
Yeah, right. Let me know what happens. I'm going to go use the bathroom. Yeah. Tell me what happens. But they're all like crowded around, and no one is ever like they report this to the police after people start going missing.
Yeah.
It's like, why didn't you immediately call the police and say, hey, there's some creep calling our phone.
I guess back then, it's just like, maybe you could just, if it's a small town and nothing really has happened, you're just like, oh, it's just some stupid frat boy, you know, until shit escalates.
Yeah, I guess.
But the second the kid goes missing is when it should be like, oh, by the way, which they do say that, but then Nash is just like, nah, it's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I blame Nash for everything wrong that happens in this movie.
You're doing the right thing.
But the sorority mom comes home and she's fantastic. I could have watched an entire movie of just her. She comes in, everybody loves her. You can see why everyone gets away with it. There's so much backstory built into just their interactions where, like, you can see why everybody gets away with everything. Because she comes in, she has booze hiding everywhere. She has it hidden with a string in a toilet.
Yeah, and doesn't wipe off the lip of the bottle. She just downs it.
I mean, I know it's, like, toilet water, and it's clean because it's not, like, urine's in the toilet bowl.
Sure.
Or in the, you know, the back part of it. But it's still, like, rusty and shit, and, like, from pipes in the ground. It's just,
I wouldn't drink it.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm even, you know, they hide guns back there in, like, The Godfather, and I'm like, you should probably Purell that first. Yes. Before you whack that guy.
There are germs everywhere.
There are germs everywhere. Look at this. We're going through all kinds of Google searches right now.
Are we Googling germs in the
in
the toilet tank?
So she's, oh, yeah, and then she, not only does she get it from the toilet, she then uses the toilet booze to swish and spit after brushing her teeth.
Yeah, I thought that was strange that she loves booze, but then was willing to waste a certain amount of booze
also,
to just mouthwash.
I thought she was brushing her teeth to get rid of the booze smell. And then she's like, no, I want to coat these gums with it.
I don't want to actually drink. I just want people to think that I was drinking.
Yeah, I want to, when I get pulled over for a DUI, be like, ha-ha, got you, sucker.
Yep, set you up.
Could you imagine if somebody thought that would be fun? Like, hey, I'm going to make a cop think I'm drunk, so then I can pass every test.
It's only a drunk person would think that. No sober person would be like, yeah, I'm going to entrap myself.
Only a boozy sorority mom, yes. So Claire goes up, and this is a super creepy shot. It reminds me, that's where I feel like Halloween and this are similar, and you can see Halloween took influences from this, where there's like, I was searching frames for stuff to find that's creepy. Like when she pulls her clothes out and she's packing behind the dress bag or the dry cleaning bag, you see just the silhouette of what looks like a human face, and it's super creepy. And then you're just waiting for her. There's not really any jump scares in this movie, per se.
No.
Like even when she goes back, it's not like, ha-ha, I got you. It's more like inevitable, you know, and that kind of makes it even creepier, where like you're just sitting there waiting for it to happen, and then when it does, it's so quick. And usually I get bummed out when slasher films don't have a ton of gore, but for some reason this one I didn't mind it. I actually liked that they cut away from stuff. Like they just show her like this for a second, and then they cut back to her constantly in this chair where, yeah, there you go, can we show this to our audience at home? And that might even be the remake. I'm not sure, but it looks like, I can't tell. But I don't have my glasses on. They keep cutting back to her rocking in the attic window, dead.
Yeah.
And it's super eerie.
Yeah, they never took the bag off.
No.
It's like she's dead, man. Just like,
oh, it's even weirder because of that. And this is actually, he's singing to her as he's rocking her, and it sounds like Elmer Fudd. Can we play clip number 4? If that doesn't creep you out, I don't know what does.
Yeah.
That's
cool that he found something to do like an echo effect on his singing.
Yeah. It's cool that he found that.
Yeah.
And that whole time you're just, if I remember right, the camera's here and she just keeps rocking close to it and then far away, close. And it's just super, because it's his POV
right.
as he's like staring at her, rocking. So now we go to the party. Not party. It's the charity event for the sure. underprivileged children, which as far as I can understand is just them sitting on a very shitty looking Santa's lap who's cussing all the time. And Barb is trying to booze up some kids for who knows what reason.
Yeah. I don't know why there was booze at this event, to be honest. It's like in the middle of the day, there are college kids and underprivileged children. Yeah. It's like, who is this booze for?
And the dude is so pissed because he's like, you're taking my girlfriend away from me, because I guess he's been looking forward to something they were gonna do, and so he's like, you bitch, blah blah blah. And can we play clip number 5, because this is their interaction after that. Mind you, a child is on his lap this entire time thinking they're talking to Santa.
Isn't Santa naughty?
Oh ho ho, fuck.
Doesn't even make sense.
The best thing is that, I mean, these poor kids, they're so underprivileged that they don't even react.
No,
they're just used to this.
Yeah. That's what they would expect Santa to say. If he had just said, ho, 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 Merry Christmas, he would have been like, you're not Santa.
Every Santa I've ever met says, ho, ho, fuck.
Oh, fuck.
Like, what?
I bet the dad in Gremlins, you remember that story?
Mm-mm.
Where the dad is on top of the roof in Gremlins and he falls in and he gets stuck.
Mm.
I'll bet before, I think he breaks his neck, but I'll bet when he started to fall, his reaction was,
oh, 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 fuck.
Rewatch Gremlins. It's super dark.
Okay.
So then this whole sequence is ridiculous, but I love it. Then Barb's having the kid chug champagne, and Claire's dad is there just trying to find his daughter. Jess tells her boyfriend she's pregnant and she wants an abortion. He's immediately like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice. And like we talked about in the beginning, there's this really kind of interesting, very frank discussion on it that I thought was very cool to see in a 1970s movie.
Yeah, it was unexpected.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
sure.
And then, and then they get another prank call, which, so you know now, knowing that what we know about horror tropes, it makes sense why this call happens with Where'd You Put the Baby? Because he just overheard them talking about this. So there's these little clues that he's in the house. And this prank call specifically, he starts trying to mess with Jess. Now, why he doesn't kill people off immediately, maybe he likes to make them afraid. Maybe he's like Pennywise. He feeds on their fear for a little bit. Who knows? Or we just wouldn't have a movie.
Right.
Let's play clip number 6.
I'm sorry, you have the wrong number.
But your mother and I must know is, where did you put the baby, Pitsy?
You've got the wrong number.
Where did you put Agnes, Billy?
Look, I'm telling you, you have the wrong number.
What your mother and I must know is...
Oh.
Yeah, I would have hung up way before she hung up.
And the music's horrifying.
Yeah.
And
just yelling, no, I'm sorry, you have the... Can I help you find the person that you're trying to...
What your mother and I must know, Billy,
no,
is...
No, wrong number. Who is... Does Billy have a last name?
Oh,
I can maybe
God.
Redirect you.
It's so weird. And I read that the composer, he actually put like forks and spoons on the strings in the piano, like silverware, so that it would reverberate and echo weird and have this kind of like wobbling sound to it.
Interesting.
Because all the music is super unnerving too. Just like in John Carpenter's Halloween. It's just like the simplicity of these movies is what's so great. I said this is the original piano version of the movie Whiplash when he's doing the recital.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he's just jamming. And I think he's doing great, but what do I know about concert pianists?
I mean, as much as I know.
He seems like he's, other than the fact that he looks like he's holding in a giant shit the entire time because his face is red and he's sweating profusely.
Yeah.
Other than that, I feel like he sounds flawless in his piano skills.
Sure, but the evaluator is there just like
all three.
Yeah,
not even like, all three. Mm. They're just like this. They're what I've heard SNL auditions are like, where you're lucky if you get one laugh out of.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't know.
Was he, do you think he was going for laughs in his piano recital?
He was like, I just want to laugh.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I chose a whimsical song.
Now, do you think he he was in that emotional state because of the conversation he just had with Jess, and that's what screwed up his dreams? Or do you think he was going to fail no matter what? Because I personally think he was going to fail no matter what.
I think, well, the way
it's a combo.
The way it's set up was that he hasn't slept for 3 days, right?
Oh,
isn't
yeah,
that what
yeah.
he says on the phone?
Yeah.
But
he's like, I haven't slept for 3 days. I don't need to deal with this right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we're meant to believe that he was affected by the conversation.
Yeah. I think it's that.
Or that he's... I think they're hinting that he's a psychopath, maybe?
Yeah. Which I think...
He might be.
He might be.
Yeah, it might be.
I think whether or not... Well, we've already warned people about spoilers.
Yeah.
The fact that he turns out not to be the killer, I think very well he may have been coming there to kill her, even if he wasn't the killer.
I would argue almost definitely,
yeah.
because he breaks into the basement
yeah.
to find her.
Yeah, yeah. There's some weird shit.
Yeah,
there's some weird.
Normal
that's
behavior.
Not normal behavior if you're... Yeah. Okay, so now Chris goes to the police station. He's yelling... And we get introduced to Lieutenant Ken. I forget his last name, but I just like calling him Lieutenant Ken.
Sure.
And he's great. He's finally a police officer that listens. And there's some fun stuff with his storyline that we probably won't have time to get into because we have 8 minutes. Now let's get back to Margot Kidder because I fucking love her stuff. So Claire's dad, mind you, his daughter's been missing for over 24 hours now. Margot Kidder decides to lighten the mood by giving us a little zoology lesson.
Sure.
With clip number 8, please.
Excuse me.
Oh, no, sorry.
Could you excuse me?
I'm sorry. Actually, you're right. Yeah, this is first. So this is when they go to the police station, and Nash is asking for the sorority house phone number so they can call if anything happens, mm-hmm. if they find Claire. And I don't know how numbers worked back in the 70s, but apparently...
I need a phone tutorial of like every single function.
Let's
because
play
I don't get it.
Clip number 7 with Nash and Barb.
Me. Could you give me the number at the sorority house? Please.
Oh, and she opens a beer in the police station and is drinking.
Yeah, sure. It's Fellatio 20880.
What?
Fellatio. It's a new exchange. F-E.
It's a new one. How do you spell it?
Capital F-E-L-L-A-T-I-O.
Thanks.
Don't mention it.
Her insistence there on little L.
Little L
is my favorite.
Oh,
part
that's totally
thing.
A jab.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, oh, he's just like, screw you.
Mm-hmm.
But the best is later on. We're just going to play the next number 9 because this is the callback to it where Lieutenant Ken finds the number for the sorority house and the other cop is just losing his mind laughing.
Yeah.
And so he goes up to Nash and he asks him about it. Can we play clip number 9?
What's this? Well, that's the number at the sorority house.
Fellatio?
Yeah, it's a new exchange. F-E.
New exchange?
Yeah, Fellatio. One of the girls that was in this afternoon gave it to me.
That's the best line ever.
She gave it to you.
Yeah.
Nash, I don't think you could pick your nose without written instructions.
The best line in that is... Yeah, one of the girls that was in here earlier, she gave it to me.
Yeah.
She gave it to you.
and then his, when it dawns on him, and he's like, he looks around, he's like, oh, it's something dirty, isn't it? So good.
So this doesn't, have, you don't need to play the sound clip, Ryan, but this is a story that happened with my mom after she saw this spoof movie I did, The Hungover Games.
Uh-huh.
Instead, it's a spoof on The Hunger Games, whatever, and instead of the tribute thing that they do in The Hunger Games... we held up the shocker,
mm-hmm.
and my mom was like, I saw the Hungover Games and it wasn't that vulgar. I don't understand. And we were like, what? It's like super dirty, Mom. The movie, when they talk about the shocker, she's like, what's the shocker? Mind you, we're in New Mexico visiting my parents for our bridal shower for her friends, and the shocker is brought up.
Perfect.
And one of the doctors, everybody's drinking and we're all having a good time. One of the doctors draws like a cartoon of what it is and slaps it on a post-it note on my mom's back. And she walks around for about an hour before she realizes it. And then she's like, oh, that's what it means. That's disgusting. I'm never watching this movie again. And I'm just like, this is a typical bridal shower in my family.
Your mom canceled you.
She canceled me.
That's too bad.
Oh, cancel culture. Oh, well.
And was this person, a doctor when they were growing up, or they're a doctor now?
Both. Yeah. So then we're really starting to ramp up that that Peter's nuts because he smashes the piano, which I'm guessing he's going to have to pay for. I don't think he owns it.
I would assume so.
Oh, there's a creepy scene where the cat hops up on Claire's body.
He's licking
the bag. So then the sorority mom, she goes upstairs, and there's this great the tension just builds and builds and builds where she's looking, and he's just holding the hook waiting for her. Mm-hmm. And he waits till she turns, and she's going to see it coming. Then it cuts away, and then we do see the aftermath of it. So we get a little gore, but man, the tension is so good in this movie.
Yeah, it is really interesting the way they don't show any of it.
No,
not a single one.
Huh?
They show the hook after. They show the bag a little bit, and they show the pick being
the unicorn horn going down, but you never see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we don't even see what happens to Phil. Like we just see she's dead later.
Yeah.
But there's something kind of cool about
and
that.
And we also don't see, what's Peter? Or
Peter, yeah. They cut out. Oh, that's my favorite part of the whole movie.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. So now, So the killer goes insane in the attic and just starts breaking shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene was so weird. Because then you just saw Peter go nuts. And so you're like, oh, fuck. It's totally Peter.
Yeah.
Like, the whole movie, I'm like, I was like, maybe it's the dad, but then I was like, the dad, it can't be, because I've seen the silhouette of the hair, and I'm like, it looks like Chris, but Chris was at the search party when one of the other kids, I don't know, but then I was like, it's got to be Peter, but I'm like, if it's Peter, I'm going to be fucking pissed, because that's too obvious.
Yeah.
But I love movies like that, where they make you guess the whole time. We already did Nash as an idiot. I just wrote, this is the world's worst police station. Like, nobody's good at their job here.
Yeah.
And then they tap the phones. We already talked at length about how cool that whole sequence is. And then, again, they cut to the dead body rocking with now a baby doll in its arms. And it's like, this character is getting super weird. The killer goes into Margot's room, in Barb's room, and she has an asthma attack. And she's like, oh, I had a nightmare that there was a man in my room. And you're like, no, there was.
Yeah.
There was.
Yeah.
And then I think you even see the shadow
in the back. Yeah,
that's the kind of shit that's so great. Or like when Laurie Strode in Halloween thinks she's stabbed Michael Myers, thinks he's dead, and she's just sitting there crying, and you just see in the background, out of focus, him sit up. It's like that stuff is so effective.
Yeah,
I love that kind of scare. So then the farmer shot the cop. We already did all that. The unicorn statue is fantastic, and it's shot in this kind of like through glass, kind of blurry. Like it's beautiful how. Yeah. I've never seen someone killed in a beautiful way. It's so weird to say that.
Turn it into art.
Oh, God, we have a minute and 40. Okay. So they find out that, the call is coming from inside the house. And then she goes upstairs, and she finds Barb and Phil dead on the bed. And the killer is speaking. You see this awesome shot of a close-up of his eyeball, which is right here, if you can see it. Whatever. You got to look it up. Look up Black Christmas eyeball. And he's saying, we're going to skip screwing turtles. Who cares? And you'll just have to watch the movie to find out what screwing turtles means. And it's just a close-up on his eye as he's saying this stuff, as Jess has just seen two of her best friends murdered. Clip number 10.
Hey, this is me, Billy.
Tell what we did, Agnes. So she slams a door on him. He gets injured. He chases after her. They shoot it in this really cool way where you only get glimpses of like his hands and his hair, and you're like, oh, it's totally Peter. Peter. And she runs down in the basement and hides. Because
they've locked all the doors. They realized earlier that there was only one door that was locked.
Which is my favorite line. Do you realize this is the only locked door?
Okay, so let's lock all the doors. But then she can't get out. And so she runs down to the basement. And then we see... Because
it's back in the olden times when you use the key. They show that earlier, so it's not a plot hole.
Yep. So we see that shot is so shadow walking.
The first shadow that appears, where it's just like half a face, is super creepy.
Yeah. And then we see that it's him. She's hiding in the dark. He's calling her name, and then he breaks the window.
Yeah.
Comes down into the basement.
Which at this point, he hasn't been made aware that there's somebody killing people yet, right? I can't remember.
I don't, I mean, he knows of the dead girl in the park, but I don't think he knows the sorority girls.
So yeah,
are being
this
killed.
Is a weird reaction to break in and be like,
very weird to break into the basement.
Unless he heard screaming, and that's why. Either way, Peter is still strange to me.
Yes,
and then he's like, "I'm here. Don't worry." And he's like, "We can run away together."
And then the police officers, we forgot the police officer keeping watch was killed. So the policemen run back to the house, and they find him dead and her dying.
Yeah, because so it cuts away.
Yeah.
He lunges at her. It cuts away. Yeah, he's been bludgeoned to death with the fire poker. We forgot she grabbed the fire poker when she grabs a weapon.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah.
And he's dead. And they just automatically are like, I knew it was Peter all along because they found that we forgot that the lieutenant finds the smashed piano. They start piecing together that he's a real maniac. He's a real creep no matter what. And that he was had an angry streak. But then the cops are like, oh, we got to get the other bodies out of here. They're not used to having this many bodies at the morgue. They all leave and they leave one cop on duty out front. And Billy, which is the character's actual name, Billy is the killer. You see the attic open up and he slinks down again, and then it's just this pan out shot from Claire's body still rocking as you're waiting for a scream or something, and all you hear is the phone ringing again.
Yep.
And it just keeps ringing, and it's such an unnerving ending to know that they think they found all the bodies, they think they solved it, there's still two dead bodies in the attic and another one about to happen and probably another dead cop. And nobody can stop it.
Yeah.
And it's such a creepy ending.
Yeah. And just like silent credits. I watched the whole credits because I was like, are they going to give us like an after credits?
It's so good.
I do wonder, excuse me, I know we're out of time.
Yeah.
They didn't say anything about it, but they, in the very beginning, when in that sound clip, when they were like listening to the phone, they were like, is that one person or more than one person?
Yeah.
I wonder if both of the guys were in on it together and if there were two killers.
I think it's just Billy, but I think Peter could have
but
been.
But Peter, like, Peter was weird. Fucking weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love this movie so much. I'm so stoked you enjoyed it too, Jesse.
Yeah, that's great.
Tweet at us if you've seen this movie, if you saw the first remake, which came out in, I think, 2004, and if you're going to see the new one. Also, throw some suggestions our way for next week, because that'll probably be our final show of the year with how the holidays fall. And Jesse's going to pick it, I promised.
Aha.
Until next time, you can find me at the Ben Begley. Jesse, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Too Much Jesse, and for sketch at The Prom Losers.
Yeah, I wanted to finish with the more important one. That's why I said at The Prom Losers. Check it out. And until next time, what is your guilty movie pleasure?
For producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.